I'm introducing Pat Sanko, who's in Hastings. She's going to talk a bit about herself and her ancestors. Right, over to you, Pat.
Hi, my full name is Patricia Jane Sanko, and today is the 25th of June 2018. My former occupation was administrator secretary. I was born in 1945 to William Daniel Moroney and Emily Elizabeth Moroney. And I was born in the Hastings Hospital and spent the first 22 years of my life at Pakipak. My father died when I was 10, so I was brought up by my mother, really. I have a sister who is 11 years older than I am and a brother who is 5 years older than I am. Both are still living. My father's parents came to New Zealand, the grandfather, in 1878, and his name was William Moroney, and he came to New Zealand with two of his brothers. They landed in Napier, where they actually set up a business as a taxi company, which was horse and cart taxis. Eventually, the brothers moved and William purchased property in Pakipak, and his two brothers went to Central Hawke's Bay. In 1875, William sent for his fiancée, who was Jane McShane, and she was 21 years old and a cook, and she arrived in New Zealand on the sailing ship Helen Denny.
What year would that have been?
I just said 1875. Oh. My grandparents built a hotel in Pakipak, but the Māori opposed the application for a liquor license, as a member of the community had been killed on the railway line when he was drunk. So the grandparents had a boarding house which provided accommodation for the freezing workers who worked at Borthworks Freezing Works, which was situated in Pakipak prior to the 1931 earthquake. The grandparents had 9 children, and they celebrated their golden wedding in 1928 with 70 guests. My father married my mother, who was Emily Elizabeth Brooker. The Brookers also were resident in Pakipak, and they had a family of 10 children. My mother was the housekeeper or housemaid for the Moroneys, and unfortunately my father got my mother pregnant, and so they were married at the Sacred Heart Church in Hastings. But because the mother was pregnant, they weren't allowed to be married on the altar. They were married in the sacristy, and they only had 2 people at their wedding. That was Mr. and Mrs. McCracken, who were their witnesses. My grandparents were not very Christian-like in their attitude towards my mother, as my mother, number one, came from a much poorer family. Number two, they were not Catholics. And of course, Mum had been their housemaid. So when my sister was born, my mother wanted my sister to be named Margaret, but the Moroney said that the firstborn girl had to be called Mary. And so they took her to the Sacred Heart Church and had her baptised, and our mother didn't even attend the baptism. And this type of behaviour really continued, and my mother would have to dress my sister in her best clothes for family functions, and Dad and my sister would go to the big house and Mum would stay at home by herself. My mother was a very generously spirited woman and never ever said anything ill against her in-laws. When my grandmother was dying, the grandfather was already dead. It was a Sunday and the family wanted to go to Mass, so Mum went and sat with the dying grandmother while the rest of the family went to Mass. And Mum used to say that she knew that if Granny opened her eyes and saw Mum sitting beside her, that she would actually have got up out of the bed. She would have been so astounded.
What about the morning teas? You went
to. Oh, yes, right. My Brooker grandparents lived just over the railway line from us, and so Mum and I went to my grandparents for morning tea every day until I was 5, and I had never been away from my mother ever. And I turned 5, so now I'm supposed to be a big girl and I can go to school. I was sent to the Pakipak school, which was just down the road from home, and I was so homesick that I used to wake up crying every morning. And my mother said, well, if you're going to cry, I'll give you something to cry for. And she used to smack me. And so I would go to school crying, and my cousin, Bill Brooker, used to go along on his bike laughing at me, which didn't make matters any better. And when I was at school, I just hated it so much, and I used to ask to leave the room to go to the toilet all the time, but I never actually went to the toilet. I used to stand in the hedge looking down the road at home because I could see the house. Anyway, the teacher was so concerned about me using the toilet so often that she sent a note to Mum, and Mum had to take me to the doctor to get my kidneys checked. And in actual fact, I was never ever going to the toilet anyway. I was just standing in the hedge.
That is so funny.
So when I was 6 and a half, I was considered old enough to catch the bus, which had kids going to high school and to central school. And my brother, who's 5 years older than I, we caught the bus to St. Joseph's School. Now, the bus stopped where the current library is, but in those days it was a garage called Ross Dysart and McLean. And we had to walk down to St. Joseph's School, which is still situated in the same place. But after school, we had to walk from St. Joseph's to Central School. And lo and behold, if we had missed the bus, because Mum didn't have any transport, but anyway, we never missed the bus. But my first day at St. Joseph's School was just beyond me, because nobody told me that when you went to a Catholic school that you said prayers. And I came from a state school to St. Joseph's where we had to say prayers before we started school. We had to say prayers before we went out to play. When we came back from playing, at 12 o'clock the Angelus bell rang and we had to say the Angelus. Before we went out at 12:30 for lunch, we had to say grace before meals. When we came back after lunch, we had to say grace after meals. And before we left to go home at night, we had to say prayers. And as well, we had religion taught to us from the catechism in those days, every single day. And I just couldn't believe it, because nobody told me that I was going to spend all day on my knees praying.
Now, when you left there, St. Joseph's, where did you go?
Oh, well, when I was at school, the Catholic girls went just across the yard to what became Tennyson College, but it was just called St. Joseph's High School in those days. And it was just a school for girls. Very small school. The maximum number of pupils would have been 90. Most girls in those days left school when they turned 15, because girls were considered that they were just waiting to get married, and there was not a great emphasis on careers. And because it was a small school, there was a very limited selection of subjects. So you either had professional, if you were really clever and were planning on being a school teacher or something similar, or you had commercial, which is what I did, shorthand typing, even though when I went, I had never even seen a typewriter.
Hadn't you?
Didn't have a clue what shorthand was. And general, for the people who were considered to be, you know, going to be working in a shop or a factory. But the success rate from sitting public exams was phenomenal, because the nuns were very good teachers, even if they were tyrants. But certainly didn't physically punish you. But because we did shorthand and typing, which for school certificate was considered one subject in those days, and because we had religion every day, which took up a period, you had to have half an hour before school to do shorthand practice and half an hour in your lunch hour to do typing. And as I was a bus pupil, I actually didn't have any lunch, because I couldn't get there before school. So I had to spend my whole lunch hour doing schoolwork.
Not in this day and age.
No, definitely. And I would have to say that we actually were not given a lot of encouragement. We were most probably put down more than encouraged, because, you know, it's all about trying and not being proud. And about the success rate, so much so that big firms like McCulloch, Butler and Spence, etc., came to the school to take as many girls as was coming out of the fifth form. Yeah. You didn't have to apply for jobs. They were just waiting for you. But that was the reputation from the school.
And you were out on the farm at Pukupak. Did you visit your grandparents' house?
Well, we grew up, because Mum wasn't a Catholic, and Dad died when I was 10, but Mum was very fierce that she was going to make sure that we grew up Catholics to prove to the Moronis that she was worthy of. So Sunday, I actually used to go to Mass on Saturday and Sunday. So we went to Mass and we came home and there would be hot scones waiting that Mum would have baked in the coal range. And after that, we had the roast dinner, and then we had the sponge cake, and also the barracuda loaf of bread that Mum wet and put in a paper bag and put in the oven to freshen up for tea. And after we had our roast dinner, we went across the railway line to our grandparents, the Brooker grandparents, where as many of Mum's brothers and sisters who lived in the area, everyone came home every Sunday for afternoon tea. And there were a lot of kids who used to fight and pick sides, and the afternoon tea was absolutely phenomenal because my mother did the scones and the cream cake. Somebody else did the pikelets and the cream horns, and somebody did the ginger crunch and the nut loaf. Everybody bought two plates of food. We had an enormous table, and the children sat up to the table on forms and the adults stood behind. And as my older sister says, the grandparents' house was nothing more than a tin shed. And it most probably wasn't, but that didn't count. It was the love that was in the house and all of these people that were part of your life. That was the important thing.
What occupation did most of the Brookers have?
Most of the Brookers were farm workers or orchardists. So they were all
didn't work at the freezing works?
No, the ancestors would have worked at the freezing works, but in 1931, when the freezing works were demolished, Mum would have been about 20, I think. So most of her brothers, three of her brothers actually went to Wellington to the railway workshops and became railway engineers, which was a very brave thing for young men from Pukupak to go to Wellington. And one ended up in Cross Creek where they changed the trains or something.
For going over the Rimutaka Hill.
Yes. That was Uncle Lawrence. And Uncle Ted eventually settled in Palmerston North, and he owned Palmerston North Auto Wreckers, and Uncle Jack was in Otani on the railways, but the others worked on farms, or two of them were orchardists.
What sort of fruits?
Just had more plums and old apple trees. The orchard, my two uncles that were orchardists were not at Pukupak. So no, there's not a great selection of fruit. Used to get fruit from Bones Orchard, which was in Marakakaho Road. And when I was a child, Mum used to get the cream truck because we had cows. And so the cream truck came every day to pick up the cans of cream. And on the way, they'd stop off at Bones and to pick up the fruit for Mum, so that she always preserved pears and peaches, which came from Bones, delivered by the cream truck, which was quite exciting.
How did she earn money when your father died? Oh, did she get a widow's pension?
No, my father died when Mum was 47 and he was 63, and so he left her with property and debt. And my mother, with the help of the farm advisor from the public trust, actually built a milking shed and got electric milking machines and purchased a herd of cows. Now, my mum didn't even have a washing machine, let alone having to learn how to operate milking machines. Plus, because she supplied cream, had this jolly elaborate separator system that had to be taken apart every day and cleaned. And the other thing was that Mum couldn't have a bull. She didn't want to have a bull, so she had artificial insemination. And Mum was very modest, and so she would always be talking about cows that were in a bad way, which as a child was very intriguing because you didn't know what that meant. Then she'd be ringing up Mr. Southern to come, and Jim Southern was the artificial inseminator who used to come to our house. So Mum milked cows and she worked extremely hard.
Did the situation with the other family improve at all?
Oh, right, yes. I think once the grandparents had died, my Moroni relations were very supportive of Mum because our father was an alcoholic and Mum stuck with him and put up with a tremendous amount of things that modern women just would not put up with. And she was very well supported by the younger Moroni children. And my Auntie Tot, who was a spinster, she actually paid for a washing machine for Mum. It was on hire purchase or something.
But she got one.
Yes, yes.
Auntie Tot, was her real name Dorothy?
No, her real name was Imelda Teresa. My father's family all had nicknames. And it was after Dad died that Mum got a washing machine here. No, the younger members of my father's family were very supportive of my mother. Well, my mother had been really good friends with these women when she was the housemaid because Auntie Tot and her were similar age. And so they'd had a really good relationship. But then it changed, of course, because of what happened.
Now, to go back to Pakipaki, the railway line.
Oh, yes, the Pakipaki railway station, because the railway line still operates. Yes. The railway station operated for years and years because the lime from Amner's Lime Works was trucked out from there, and there used to be closer into town where they used to actually put stock onto the trains. There was a sheepyards at Longmans, and my Uncle Bob actually worked there as stockman, and they used to actually load sheep and stock which would have been purchased at the Stortford Lodge sale yards. So the Pakipaki railway station operated most probably all the time I was living in Pakipaki. And in those days, there were five railway houses. There was the station master's house and another house on one side of the railway line, and then the other three houses were on the other side of the railway line. And they ran adjacent to our farm.
And did you have district parties?
Oh, yes, fantastic. There used to be, my mother was a member of the Women's Division of Federated Farmers. She was actually a life member. And so Women's Division was a very strong organisation in that rural environment. And I went to Women's Division from age 10 because it was at night and Mum wouldn't leave me at home. So I went to Women's Division, and there was a family, the Spears family, who were very social people, and they used to have lots and lots of parties. And can remember, you know, going to Hongaria Hall and having fantastic suppers.
What was the hall's name?
Hongaria. There's two Mariahs at Pakipaki, and Hongaria is the one next to the Catholic Church. I've got vivid memories of doing Old Ensign, which nobody knows about now, but all the functions always finished with that. No, very sociable community. It was a very large community in those days.
Would there have been many children at that little primary school you went to?
I don't know, Erica. I was only 6 and a half when I finished. There were only about four white kids.
Was there one classroom?
Oh, no. There would have been, no, it went up to standard 6, of course, in those days. No, it was a full-size school. I mean, the Pakipaki school's still there, but we would have had more pupils in those days because there wasn't a school at Bridge Par. So Bridge Par kids were bused to Pakipaki. So there was just one school for Pakipaki and Bridge Par. It was a full-size school.
And is your house still there?
No, our house is not still there. The milking shed is still there. There was a fire in our house and it's been destroyed. And the gateway is still there, but it's all overgrown now. It's nothing like it was when it was our home. But when my grandparents built what was supposed to be the hotel, which became a boarding house, they also built a bakery, which was the house that we actually grew up in, and a billiards room in Pakipaki. And so in the actual boarding house, on the ground floor, the Moronis had the general store and post office. And then next door was the bakery, and next door to that was the billiard room.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it, now?
It's completely hard to imagine. It's actually quite sad when you drive out there now.
And after the meatworks went, there would still be people that worked on local farms and things?
I don't think so, because I think that it would have been damaged in the earthquake. Oh. Don't really know about that, but no, it was closed. They provided accommodation for freezing workers more than anything else. Local farmers, people would have lived on the farm.
My grandfather's two brothers, Daniel and Mick, had built hotels in central Hawke's Bay. I think one was in Waipukurā, but one was definitely in Waipawa. And that was what my grandfather had wished to do. And that was why...
They were Moronis.
Yes, they were my father's brothers.
Did they ever say why they came out to New Zealand?
Well, no, but I'm presuming it was because of the potato famine. Goodness. They were coming out here for a better life, but, you know, these people were dead long. And my father died when I was 10, so...
Yeah. There was no follow-on.
No.
So my older sister, who's 11 years older than I, was married, I think it would have been about 18 months after Dad died, and she married Peter McElwee, and he came from Tawa, and so my sister moved to Wellington, which meant then that there was just my brother and Mum and I, and we were a really tight family, and my mother was such a hard worker, and my brother had a desire to own his own farm, and he became a farm manager, and eventually he managed to get a lands and survey farm in Rearea in Gisborne, and that was fantastic for them but quite devastating for Mum and I, because it meant that then he and his wife, and they also had three boys the same age as our three boys, were moving to Gisborne, which sort of seemed like a long way away. But once we got married, Mum only stayed in Pakipak for 1 year because it was too lonely for her, and so the property was subdivided into 10-acre blocks, and Mum moved into a lovely flat in St Albans Street. And my mother used to say that she never went to sleep without thanking God for all the good things in her life. So when I was growing up, of course, there were very few white children in Pakipak because it was a very strong Maori community. And we lived right in the pā opposite Mihiroa Marae. And so I played with Maori kids, and I don't actually think I even knew the word Maori. They were just the kids across the road. My mother wouldn't allow us to go over there and play because there wasn't a great hygiene regime going on, and they used to just go to the toilet outside sometimes. But the Peakman children came to our house all of the time and played, and I actually learned to ride a two-wheeler bike because Tyron Peakman had a little two-wheeler bike. Otherwise, I most probably would never have learned to ride a bike till I was an adult, because we didn't have any money for bikes. And the Maori woman used to come, and Mum was sort of like a confidant for them, and they would come, and Kiwi Marco in particular used to come down and have a cup of tea with Mum some nights, and I would be listening to these conversations. And one conversation that intrigued me greatly, but I knew better than to ask what it meant, or else I would never have been allowed to stay in the room again, was that Kiwi was always telling Mum who was up the duff. And the only duff I knew was a plum duff pudding. And I couldn't imagine what was the excitement about somebody being up the duff. And the other thing that sticks with me greatly is the fact that we had a telephone, and not many people had telephones, and Sue Peakman used to come across and ring up a meat order, and she used to ask for several things, but she always asked for neck and breast. And once again, I was desperate to know what it meant, but I wouldn't ask because I would be banned when she came to use the phone. But it sounded so intriguing to me, and I used to always wish that we could have neck and breast. And now I know it's the cheapest cut of meat you can have, and we had our own sheep meat. But it was very intriguing as a child to listen to things. Pakipak was a Maori settlement. The white families were employed by the railway, and the only other white family I can think of that we had close contact with in Pakipak were the McDonalds. Alec McDonald was an agricultural contractor. The rest were Maori, and the mass at Pakipak in those days, of course, was in Latin, and any prayers or hymns that the congregation joined in with were in Maori.
Did you end up being able to speak Maori?
No, not at all.
That's a bit sad, I think, in a
yes,
way.
I know, but Maori people didn't actually speak Maori anyway. Mm. They spoke English. So other than at mass where they sung the hymns in Maori.